composer and band leader David Ware on tenor sax with African drums, Matthew Shipp on piano, William Parker on bass, Guillermo Brown on drums. It's from his 1999 album, Surrendered. This is Lead Stories. I'm Utrice Lead. And that's kind of a clue as to how I feel. It's like you feel surrendered in this climate, don't you? The political situation so overwhelming. And at every turn, this is the feeling we are getting. We're being worn out. We are succumbing to political fatigue. It's just like, is there no place where you can just sit down for a minute and breathe a little bit and feel safe in doing so? You get the feeling these days that you need extra eyes, about four sets of extra eyes and four sets of extra ears, and you're always to be on the alert because something huge could happen in the blink of an eye, and it is going to overwhelm us. You know, it's going to just mushroom into something tremendous, totally outside of our capacity or ability to control. And the people who are causing this atmosphere, the people who are creating it, are just going from one stupid thing to the other. One major crisis after the other. And without any care as to the consequences of their actions, they're just going along. Donald Trump, even before he got into the White House, was pursuing this pattern of just one major flare-up after the other. There has been no rest, no respite. And the nation, and we're not the only ones, by the way, many nations around the world are on edge. What's going to happen next? What other calamity will occur? And we are getting this now from Congress, from other groups outside of the mainstream of politics. We're getting it from the media. We're getting it all over the place. Frankly, I'm just fed up. I'm worn out. I'm just ready to say, you know what? The heck with all of this. I'm going someplace in Podunk, nice and quiet, and I'm just going to hole up there until things calm down. But this is a really rough kind of this is a rough atmosphere to deal with and to live with. And I could understand why people all across the country are just on edge. They're really on edge because they don't know what's going to happen. But they do know that what is happening is just plain stupid. And we're likely to encounter just more of it that is causing great inconvenience and torture, psychological torture for a lot of people. I'm not exaggerating. There are people who really have come to a point where they don't know what to do. They're exasperated. They have no idea how to cope with this unrelenting calamity. It's not stopping. Well, anyway, just the same, you have to muddle through. But it is alarming, and it's getting worse. And we've been talking about it, and I've noticed now in media coverage, you're getting a lot of the same sentiment. People are beginning to express their discomfort, the great psychological discomfort about the climate that we're living in. And we're living in this climate because people deliberately do it. for no reason than, for example, with Donald Trump, he can. Gets up in the morning in whatever mood he's in, and he goes to Twitter, and he, you know, he just disorganizes your day with his stupid, unnecessary daily torture, you know, and your whole day is messed up because now his action creates all these reactions in the media, and you can't get away from it. They bring it to you literally minute by minute, hour by hour. It's an unfortunate thing, and it probably is part of a plan to just wear the people down, just grind them psychologically, to overwhelm them, to make us feel that, look, we give up. You do whatever you want to do, but just shut up. We'll give you all of the power you want. Just shut up and go away. Just don't irritate us. That's pretty much where we're getting. A lot of people are already there. They're tired, worn out. And yet we still have to deal with it. We can't ignore it. Because in the meantime, very serious things are happening, and they all suggest an orchestrated effort to reorganize life as we know it. These things are serving as distractions, but at the same time, they are very, very serious issues that you cannot ignore. Or if you ignore them, you ignore them at your own peril. This thing, which I see the media, they're now understanding as a whole, this is a very serious business of a sitting president accusing a predecessor, an immediate predecessor, of tapping his phones, wiretapping. It initially was reported as a kind of, there he goes again. But this is very, very, very serious. It's not a joke. And it can lead to major repercussions, not only within the United States, but around the world, when it's all said and done. The members of the intelligence community who are called upon by the media to address the question are all saying the same thing. This is very serious. People who have been observing government for a long time say it's very serious and unprecedented. And it's not just this idea of Donald Trump lodging a complaint. Of course, he hasn't produced any evidence so far to bolster his charge. But it really brings so many questions into play here that have, in their own way, that will have a major impact on the presidency itself, but also on the people. This is big. I'm telling you, don't underestimate it. It's a big issue. So far, we still have the members of the intelligence community saying there is no merit, they find no merit to Donald Trump's charge. The head of the CIA, the head of the NSA, all of the alphabet agencies that have to do with intelligence gathering, they're saying they see no indication that Donald Trump's charge, that Barack Obama ordered his campaign headquarters to be wiretapped. They see no evidence of it. Here's where our frustration comes in. We know that we can't trust any of these guys. We can't trust the intelligence agencies because of their history. We can't trust what they say as the truth. We can't trust what Donald Trump necessarily says is the truth either. And we have learned we cannot trust Barack Obama. We can't trust any of them. And yet, the issue calls upon us at some point to trust somebody, trust what is being said by somebody. Who is that going to be? And on what basis do you trust? The reason this is now being treated as a major, major issue, which it is, as I said, it's unprecedented. And it now brings into play the whole question about what is the nature between us, the citizens, the government, and even within the government itself. Are we witnessing? Here are the other questions that are arising. Are we witnessing an effort by one president, Trump, to really overstretch his hand and really confirm, bring straight into the open that he is an autocrat? This is going to be an autocracy in real form. Is this, on if you wish to cast your faith with the idea that Barack Obama couldn't have done that, he's a decent guy, all the things that we should not be using as rationales for our opinion, but at the same time, let's say you want to feel more sympathetic about Barack Obama, he wouldn't do something like that. But if, in fact, it did happen, do we have an indication of what people have been saying, that there is, and this goes back some time, there is or has been a kind of coup going on, engineered by a combination of forces, including the military, including a former president? You know, big questions are in play here. We cannot just let it pass as, well, there's Donald Trump being Donald Trump, saying things without proof. Frankly, the whole lot of them, they're unappealing at this moment. And for reasons that we well know, all of them, all of the elements at play here have proven to be inveterate liars who cannot be trusted with our, and I say our democracy. They can't be trusted with it. But they are in charge. So how is this game going to play out? And especially with people like us. Are we going to take sides here? Dare we take sides? What for us are the main questions that should be answered? What role do we play, if any? So look at the elements. We have President Obama saying nothing other than having his spokesman say that this is terrible to make such a charge against Barack Obama by Donald Trump. For the moment, that's all he said, and that's it. Donald Trump continues to push his allegation so far without evidence that Barack Obama did do this. This is a very major crime. If a president is found to have, to be doing this, or found to have ordered this, this is such a huge crime. Because supposedly the buffer against this kind of autocratic move is a court, a secret court, that the president, if he felt or if there were reasons, and not just the president shouldn't be involved in this at all. If the intelligence community believed that this was happening, they would then go to this court and ask for a warrant, and that's how it would be done. But Trump's charge is that Obama oversaw an operation, much like Watergate, oversaw an operation bugging his campaign headquarters and who knows where else during an election in which Obama favored Hillary Clinton. This is big. And now we have the inevitable, which is now the same agencies that have already said in so many ways their investigations, their preliminary investigations have yielded nothing, have given no indication that Trump's charges are true. They are now being asked to go back. And on top of that, a congressional hearing is now being impaneled. So it's a big mess. And for us, none of the parties is credible. None of them. For those who maintain, well, you know, Obama is a nice guy. He's been a nice guy. He's gotten through his presidency without any really major conflagration. He's not the kind of guy who would do something like that. I say, think again. Obama's administration has not been forthright and honest. They're all scandalously involved in underhanded stuff. And that's been their history. All right, let's get to the calls. We'll go to Steve from New York, who will start us off today. Steve, what have you to say? Oh, we just lost Steve. Well, then we go to Bruce from North Carolina.
Yes. Can you hear me, Utrice?
Yes, I can.
Oh, all right. Yes, I'm from North Carolina, as you said before. It tells you something about America, the mere fact that a man like Donald Trump can even get into office in this country. It tells you something about, I think, the overwhelming, though not everybody, but it tells you a lot about this whole mentality of America. For him to ever have even been elected as president. And then when you look at what he does in terms of his appointments to positions in the cabinet and other offices, he just even takes it further into what you were saying. It's absolutely insane. I mean, it's crazy to see what's going on, you know, in the whole White House situation. And when it comes to Obama, it looks as if Trump, and I see the racism in what Trump is doing too, that anything that Obama has done, good or bad, whatever it is, it's going to repealing Obamacare, he's tapping lines, anything to destroy any, if he had any kind of legacy. But I see white supremacy and racism being involved in the whole scheme of things.
But where does that put you personally now? As a political person, what does the current situation say to you about what you should do about perhaps recalibrating your political point of view? What is it doing to you as a political person, causing you to rethink?
It makes me understand, even though I had understood it from the beginning, but it makes me understand even more so now that we, especially African American people, we can't put any hope in the political process at all, whether it's Obama and expecting something for him from him, or Trump and definitely not expecting anything from Trump. But it puts me in a situation to saying that we have to begin to do things for ourselves, and first of all, start thinking for ourselves, and not. And I really saw it when Hillary Clinton was running. I knew it very, very early on that Hillary Clinton was not the person, and I knew Trump was not the person, and of course, Ben Carson was not the person, and so it seems in terms of looking at the political arena as any solution to any problems for African-American people and other minorities, especially, but the whole population in general, you just can't look there at all. And as a matter of fact, I'm going to be speaking on some of these things tonight in Brooklyn, New York, which is why I'm here calling you from the Hampton Inn in Brooklyn, New York, on Flatbush Avenue. Mm-hmm. Oh, you know the area?
Yes.
Oh, okay. I didn't know. A friend of mine just told me to listen to the program, and he said she might even allow you to say where you're going to speak tonight. I'm going to speak on at 1051 Atlantic Avenue for the United African Movement, Alton Maddox's organization, at about 7 o'clock, 1051 Atlantic Avenue between Franklin and Clawson. Tonight at 7 o'clock. So that's why I'm here. And when he told me to listen to the program, you're really giving me some good information for my lecture tonight. And I'm really reviewing my book. I have a book out called Recapturing the African Mind. And I'd like to maybe one day be interviewed on your program for my book. So that's basically what I'm doing. But of course, I'm going to bring in other things tonight in the lecture, too.
Oh, great. What I want to ask you, Bruce, is what could you be saying to your audience tonight about constructing a political alternative using the current situation that we're in?
I think I'm going to, and it seems almost like I'm repeating myself, but I definitely would say that we are definitely going to have to look inward, look to ourselves, and begin to do for self, and begin to try to keep more money into our own communities and to support each other and to try to stand against the whole system, and just don't expect anything from the system at all, because you'll be disappointed if you're stupid enough to have expected anything from it anyway. But we're definitely going to have to begin to think more about to become more independent in our thinking and more independent in our actions and not depend on the U.S. government for anything. I think there are going to be a lot of programs that are going to be cut, and I even heard on NPR, you probably heard it too, about how even Muhammad Ali's wife was questioned about her religion when she was coming in from the islands. Right,
well,
you heard about it, huh?
Mostly his son, Muhammad Ali Jr. Here's a question.
This is the big
picture that you're giving us, and it's a valuable response. In the immediate situation, are we in this fight at all, or are we supposed to just excuse ourselves from this fight and concentrate on the long-term picture?
I don't think we can excuse ourselves and be here. We're going to have to definitely be a part of it because, as I said before, there's going to be a cut in a lot of our programs and things that elderly people, that people who are disabled, won't be able to take advantage of. So, to answer your question, we're going to have to, I think, fight on both fronts, be as independent as possible, but also fight for whatever we have to fight for, as we've always been fighting. Seems like everything has been cut back. We had stopped fighting, but it looks like we got to put on the boxing gloves again and just fight on both fronts.
All right. Well, just remind us tonight at the UAM, the United African Movement, you're going to be there tonight. At what time?
Right. At 7 o'clock, the program starts, and it's at 10 51 Atlantic Avenue in Brooklyn, New York, and that's between Franklin and Clawson, and I'll be reviewing my new book called Recapturing the African Mind. And you please let me know how off the air, too, I can get in touch with you to get you a copy of my book, and maybe you might want to do an interview with me.
All right. Thank you. Good to talk with you, and glad that you opened up the program for us today. David from San Francisco, what are your thoughts about where we are?
Well, hi, Utrice. And let's see, regarding that previous caller, he was looking for information to work on with, you know, gathering, you know, stability. I found a lot of strength in, you're familiar with the press being called the Fourth Estate?
Yes.
And if you look at the ancient three estates, the Fourth Estate was considered so powerful that it was able to compete against the ancient three estates. And they were the king, the military, and the church. Or you could say economics, belligerence, and superstition. And so the press was the idea that you could write down the truth, and no matter what, which of those three types of thuggery came along, you would still be able to have the truth. You could hide the truth in a, you know, in a cupboard. You could bury it underneath a rock and dig it up later. But the printing press became so powerful that it became the Fourth Estate and very powerful. So I've always looked at the idea of beating the three estates. Since we were children, we've still been beat around by the con games of fake numbers, fake economics, just sheer belligerence and superstition. And the idea that we're supposed to dance to any of their tunes, children are born into a world where they don't understand the rules. Their parents are not taught well enough to be able to compete against those rules. And so we may be born into, you know, ancient financial traps. We may be born into ancient superstitious traps. We may be born into sheer belligerence. And the idea of being able to rise above all three of those and actually attain some kind of joy in life is one of the strengths of the Fourth Estate. So I'd urge that previous caller to look at that. I was spurred to call, though. Are you familiar with who Roy Cohen was?
just Foghorn Leghorn.
Oh, well, Roy Cohen, if you ever look at an old video or photograph of Joe McCarthy, Roy Cohen was this weaselly little guy that was always sitting at Joe McCarthy's side. He was kind of the brains behind Joe McCarthy. And
okay,
when
I thought you said Leghorn, but
No. Okay. Roy Cohen. And, C-O-H-N is how he spelled his
last name. Yes.
Yeah, and he became, after Joe McCarthy died in, I think, 1956 is when Joe McCarthy died, Roy Cohen moved back to New York and became a famous power broker mob attorney. And he apparently was an attorney for almost all of the big mob families in New York City. And he became such a power broker that a lot of politics of New York, New Jersey, probably Connecticut, Rhode Island, became, you know, his turf. Now, when you look at Donald Trump, Donald Trump's dad used Roy Cohen. And Donald Trump palled around with Roy Cohen for about the last 15 years of his life. And many of the people who are close to Donald Trump are acolytes of Roy Cohen. There's Roger Stone, there's Paul Manafort, and Dick Morris. Dick Morris, of course, was supposed to be a pal of Bill Clinton, but turned around to stab him in the back. And when you look at the techniques of Roy Cohen, he would come up with fake inquiries. Joe McCarthy was famous for this because he learned it from Roy Cohen. In fact, I think when Joe McCarthy held up a blank piece of paper and it's now proven that he held up a blank piece of paper and he said, I have 56 names of communists in here and I have to do this. And he would create 56 inquiries based upon no proof, and then he would be able to give away those 56 inquiries to 56 crooked lawyers or 56 crooked investigators, and he would be able to get 56 jobs for crooks. And so those crooks would then be able to get into the Secret Service, or they'd be able to get into inquiries using security state inquiries and be able to get security clearances. And so when you start looking at everything that Donald Trump has done, it's this same technique over and over again. He's been, whether he accuses Obama of wiretapping Trump Towers, he's going to be able to create all sorts of inquiries for his buddies, and they will not only get a top secret paycheck, but they'll get security clearances. And so you start looking at how dirty this is, and this technique, he's a job creator, all right, but he's a job creator for organized crime. And so I, you know, when you look at Roy Cohen as being organized crime, and then you look at the idea that organized crime lawyers or organized crime investigators will be able to get security clearances to study things that are untrue, that means that they can sit on their butts for month after month and pretend that they're doing something and get a top secret budget to do it. And so I would urge people to study Roy Cohen more, and you're going to learn the techniques of Donald Trump, and all of this phony baloney stuff that he's coming up with is just it's a job creator program, but it's a job creator job creation program for organized crime.
But is it anywhere even remotely in your mind that it's possible, even with his sordid history, that Donald Trump is leading us to something about Obama here that is, in fact, true?
Well, I don't know offhand, but there were two different ways that I was thinking about this structurally. You know, say, for example, if you know what a secure line is in yeah. telephone? Yeah, like, say, for example, the red phone that... you know, the president has the red phone to call Moscow and, you know, talk to him in person in case there's a problem. You know, the U.S. can contact Moscow, but nobody can bug that phone because it's actually a direct line and nobody can tap into it. Well, the Pentagon has got one of those to the White House. And so when Trump moves to Florida, he basically forces the Pentagon to make a direct line down there to Florida. He then also forces the Pentagon to do a direct line to the Trump Towers or to wherever his newest White House is. So he's forcing the opportunity to, you know, it's one thing that if the Pentagon is 1 or 2 miles away from the White House, a direct line is pretty easy to do and it's pretty tough to tap into it. But if you all of a sudden force a direct line to go from the Pentagon to Florida, that's, I don't know if it's 1,000 miles, but it's surely many hundreds of miles away, and the opportunity of somebody tapping into that line are increased by every foot it goes. And the same to New York. If it's going to go up into the top floor of a skyscraper in New York City, each floor would have the opportunity of tapping into it. So structurally, the opportunity of tapping into him increases every time he creates his new distant White House. And so whether or not, you know, some business competitor of his decided to tap him and tried to blame it on Obama, it's simply structure for tapping into a secure line would be one thing. But then this came up in one of the other talk shows, that whether or not, you know, somebody had been investigating Russian diplomats, and one of those Russian diplomats went to visit Trump, and it's, I think, didn't they find that one of those Russian diplomats had went through the back door into Trump Towers?
Yes, they did. It's amazing. I think you and I are probably the only people who have not had contact with the Russian diplomats.
There you go. But this whole idea that if they were tracking the Russian diplomat and he had a cell phone, the other opportunity, and this kind of gets into that secure phone, whether somebody was trying to save a few bucks by picking up that phone and making a long-distance call, and they thought they'd save $10 a minute, but they actually locked themselves into an investigation. It's possible that, somebody was investigating Donald Trump for, just IRS kind of, that he was a tax dodge, or Donald Trump for some other kind of inquiry, and they accidentally found it from some previous investigation. But I would be surprised that Obama had personally done it, because I don't think.
Well,
that,
Obama may not personally have done it, but
right.
He probably. Had people, there were people around him, I mean, this was in the heat of the election, who thought it might have been a good idea. And in as much as they were affiliated or were working closely with Obama, it, in terms of Donald Trump, the way he sees it, it was Obama. So
yeah, well,
we don't know where this is going. The idea is, I mean, we have not been as a nation in a situation in which a sitting president is charging a former president with a crime if it were, the shoe were on the other foot, Donald Trump will be facing impeachment. This is a very serious crime. And or jail time.
Oh, yeah. Well, so, absolutely. Have you ever heard, there's a famous Lyndon Johnson phone call. Lyndon Johnson recorded most of his telephone calls. And a lot of people don't know it, but Richard Nixon, this was in 1968, I believe it was the spring of 1968, Richard Nixon secretly made a deal with the North Vietnamese to subvert the peace talks. Apparently Lyndon Johnson was trying to do some peace talks with North Vietnam. And Richard Nixon goes around his back and does a secret deal with the North Vietnamese to, if the North Vietnamese will just stall the talks, Richard Nixon would give them a better deal than what they would get with Lyndon Johnson. So that was entirely wiretapped. And Lyndon Johnson is talking with, I think it was Dirksen. Dirksen was the chief Senate. I guess he was the House or the Senate chair or whatever it goes by. And Dirksen is talking with Lyndon Johnson, and Johnson, in no subtle terms, says, this is treason. And he doesn't file charges against Nixon for doing it. But as far as the North Vietnamese were concerned, they got totally screwed by it, because the war dragged on for another 6 years, and millions of North Vietnamese got killed because Nixon was a liar. Well, that was called the October surprise back then, mm-hmm. And then, of course, with Jimmy Carter, the Republicans pulled an October surprise. They went and contacted the Iranians and told them that they would get a better deal if they let Ronald Reagan get elected over Jimmy Carter. And, of course, the Iranians have been screwed ever since. That's, what, now 30, 40 years? And so this idea that the Republicans have got a pattern and practice of doing these October surprises, it would certainly make sense that anybody would want to keep track of Trump or the front runner of the Republicans to make sure that such a thing was not happening. But at the same time, I just I think it's more likely that it was a side investigation.
If you can.
No, I just find it more likely it was a side investigation, if it even happened. But like I say, it's more likely that they were holding up a blank piece of paper so they can give a million jobs to their crooked lawyer buddies.
Well, we will see. But in the meantime, the question that we want addressed and we want to look at more deeply is, where does that put us? Where does this put the system? Where does it put us with respect to the system? Thank you so much. A very informative call today. Thank you. Khalil from South Carolina, you're on the air.
Good afternoon. How you doing, Lucie?
Fine. How are you?
I'm good. You have some of the best callers in the world.
I think so, too. I do. What is your feeling at this time with this issue? And in terms of your being a political person, what does that tell you that you should be doing at this time?
I should be listening to last week's show because you had a caller who was talking about systems, system dynamics, maybe something like that. But it was definitely about systems, and he made me think, and it moves me forward to today. I think at this point, conscious people, we need to get ready to take care of ourselves. It's going to be rough for a little while, okay? And I think when the dust settles, we need to co-opt the system just because that's the way it's set up. But I think that this person, this mentally ill fascist who's in charge of our country right now, some of the things that he's doing and going to try to do, and it's so much disruption. It's making us appear weak to our international foes and even foes that we have who live here. So it's not good at all. And that's what I'm saying. We have to just look out for ourselves because the banking system is failing. The social institutional systems are failing. We have privatized prisons. The grift and grab has gone rampant. I mean, anytime you have someone who nominates for cabinets, people who are antithetical to the cabinet that they are in charge of. I mean, not the cabinet. I'm sorry. That's the wrong term.
Their portfolios, yeah.
Right. I mean, especially Nancy, not especially, but it's so much. I mean, there's not much good to look at. And your last caller with the telephonic surveillance. See, you have to look at who lives in Trump Tower. Now, there are tenants such as Donald Trump who live in Trump Tower. So there's two or three ways this could go. Now, we're already pretty sure that Russia has blackmail things on Trump so that they can control him. And, you know, when he gets out of line, they just drop a little more information and make sure that he goes in the right direction. But you see, Paul Manafort lives in Trump Tower. Some very interesting characters live in Trump Tower. And they don't tap phones anymore. It's a server somewhere. But that goes the way Trump lines. Okay, it's not really that complicated. And you know, knowing Donald Trump, because he's so predictable, he would go to someone else's apartment and make phone calls thinking, oh, it's not my line. I'm going to go down to my buddy's apartment, you know, four floors down. He has the whole floor. They're not looking at him, and we have to talk anyway.
But when you say you have to look out for yourselves, could you give us an idea of what that would translate to from your perspective?
Absolutely. Just like in the mid to late 60s, the Party for Self-Defense, they fed children. They make sure people got medical care. And this was community-based. So this is what I'm thinking. I'm glad you asked me that because I was going off on a tangent. Thank you. Yes.
So you basically organize political is this going to be a political party or what's the structure going to look like? I mean, just loosely.
Well, you have to find like-minded people because even though we think we don't agree with a lot of folks, it's like a Venn diagram. You know, people like us, we do have some commonalities with Tea Party folks. At some level, and that's about it. But anyway, you have to find commonality and build coalitions. And from there, you have to run locally. See, the system's not going to be totally destructive. There will be local systems.
Hmm.
See, but the federal government is going to be in disarray. It already is in disarray.
All right.
And the last thing is that the philosophy of the NOI, right? Because they really believe...
It's a Nation of Islam you're referring to.
Yeah, to circulate money in the community. And that's a good way, because we may get to bartering, but those are my thoughts. And I just hope that you keep getting these wonderful callers, because it's such a good lesson.
Thank you so much. I think so, too. And that's the value, I think, of people talking to each other and thinking out loud. A lot of what is shared on the program is high caliber stuff that, the major media would look to these experts. We're experts, too. We have information. We have good thoughts. And we should not feel uncomfortable about sharing our thoughts, because you never know. You're planting a seed, in other people's minds, and you're sharing valuable information from an authentic source. So this, which is you, which is great. Thanks so much for calling in and contributing today. Let's talk to Chris from New York.
Good afternoon, Yutrice.
Hello.
Hi. I haven't listened to you in a while, and I just had a call in regarding this new situation here. And I just would like to focus. I mean, one can say so many things, but I'm going to try to be very focused. This idea that we hear thrown all over the place, left and right and center, that, there's no indication with the sloppy accusation that, Trump has made. First of all, the CIA is not there to give you, meaning a collective you, all right, what the truth or the transparency behind what they do. Because what they do, their intent is to deceive. That's what they do. They're not there to be transparent. And the idea that you hear a lot of people on the left now, since everybody is, with all of these labels, whatever that's supposed to mean. I mean, a lot of this media that generally they're more, Clinton Democrats, whatever. The idea that, and these suggestions that come out, not that long ago, the left would have been up in on fire when you talked about the intelligence agencies, to use that in quotes. The CIA is not even here. They're not even created to keep us secure. Because last night, I was listening to something very briefly, and it said some statement that was put out that they're here to keep us safe. Safe from whom? The CIA is not here to keep us safe. I would say that's more the FBI, the military, perhaps the local police. The CIA is intended to do spy work. That's what they do. And they go all over the world, as every other country has, and this is what they do. And in this technological age that we live in, they're not going to sit here and reveal anything to you. And when they create these little situations, okay, they create them for a reason, to make you think, you the viewer, okay, that they're there and they're protecting us. I would make a suggestion. First of all, even as far as Obama is concerned, I mean, I voted for Obama. But the idea that, when the previous caller, with all due respect, was speaking, and, he gave a lot of information, that, the idea that the Obama administration, first of all, the president doesn't make these decisions on his own or her own, okay? They work with a group of people. And maybe he didn't give the direct order, if it happened, but he probably was aware of it. So the idea that some people are willing to bend over backwards to think that President Obama, as an American president, directly involved, at least with some of these agencies, and they are required to some degree to notify him or to inform him, might not have known this, is really naive at best. And frankly speaking, it's almost like a willing ignorance. And I'm not saying that people have to believe it, obviously, but, because the previous caller was talking about we have to take care of ourselves, and I agree with him. And before we can actually get to that point mentally and psychologically, we need to understand that what you see okay? What is the saying goes, you know, things are not what they appear to be. It's very deceptive, and it's intended to deceive you so that you don't know what is going on. You know, I mean, that's what happens with military coups, and I just had to get that out there because I am, sometimes it just boggles my mind the degree to which all of a sudden they're so willing to side with the so-called intelligence agencies. You know, this whole thing, for example, when Clinton was running, and these juvenile outbursts that she said that, you know, Putin was Hitler, and that later on she made the statement that he was out, you know, that they interfered with the election because they were against her being elected, is juvenile. It's like two teenage girls in high school fighting over a boy. I don't understand why they don't see how embarrassing it is intellectually, and these are supposed to be educated people who regard themselves as intellectually superior, even though they might not come out and tell you that because they have their degrees and they're, you know, they have their resumes. And the idea that people just accept this and they get, you know, we get personal because that's what is intended for us to, they intend that to happen. And at some point in time, you know, you do ripen enough to understand that. I mean, all of us have been through naive and, you know, this naivete, and including myself. And I see it now, and it's just, how can I say, it's breathtaking sometimes.
But how does this make you feel as a political participant in this thing, this concept called democracy? How are you feeling right now with this in play?
I don't know how to answer the question. I can respond in this way. I am comfortable at this point in time, if I could use that word, I say that a little bit tongue-in-cheek, with the statement that I just made previously, and that is that I don't trust anything that is coming out of these people who are supposedly in charge and who are making, you know, these little, who are pulling the strings. It is apparent to me, and this has nothing to do with how one feels about Trump. I was not a Trump supporter. Okay, and I think it's scary the people that he has appointed to his cabinet, all of these hedge funders and these Wall Street guys. However, having said that, I have to say that right here, I had this discussion last night with somebody. It is very apparent to me, as much as I can see, that there is a lot going on to, if you like to use the phrase, dethrone his presidency. It's very apparent to me. Now, as I said before, things are not what they appear to be, and it could be very misleading, all right? But I think that that's what's going on here. I think that's what they want to do. And because he's such a sloppy speaker in the sense that he just puts it out there, you know, for example, even like saying, well, that, you know, that Obama had him wired or, you know, tapped. Mm-hmm. A person who was a little more careful with the way that they approached the subject wouldn't say that. They would say, well, the administration, or before I actually took office, you know, they wouldn't actually say Obama, because it personalizes it a lot. And that's very unfortunate. I don't know where his brain is when he does that, but I just think that that's what's going on, and they're not going to let up. Okay, they're not going to let up, and I'm including a lot of the people on the left, a lot of the alternative media. It's, how can I say, if you look at whatever mainstream media is supposed to be, they could very easily be what we used to hear years ago about the Soviet Union and the so-called communist countries. They're like state-run media. I mean, they really are. I think, in fact, I had heard recently, I'm not sure if you've ever heard this, Anderson Cooper had actually interned with the CIA. He had been an intern at the CIA, I guess maybe when he was going for his journalism.
You know, there's a lot of cross-pollination between the intelligence agencies and people who are in the media.
Exactly.
The New York Times is and Washington Post, they're well known for, quote, reporters who in the older days and even now, they get assigned to particular stories outside of the United States. But it's well known that many reporters function as operatives of the intelligence
agencies. Even though they might be what do they call their NOCs, with they're not officially with them, but they operate that way. Exactly. You understand. Thank you very much, because that's exactly what I meant to suggest here, you know. And I just think that just people just listening might consider, before they allow their liking or disliking about any candidate or person up there at this point in time, and this includes Obama and includes everybody who's running, okay, they might just sit back for their own, I think, if, you know, for the self-respect that they have for their own understanding and intelligence and as citizens of the country, would just sit back and consider that, because what they want to do now, that elusive they, is to confuse us. Okay.
Well, we have to leave it there, I'm afraid, because we're out of time.
But thank you for the time.
A great deal shared with us by everyone. I thank you so much for being consistently on the high end of things. It really, really makes me proud to be a student of the callers. And I think this is a sentiment shared by most everybody listening to the program. Thank you so much. You can reach me at leadstories, L-E-I-D, stories at gmail.com. A pleasure always and a great privilege to be in your company. We can continue this discussion tomorrow and the day after and whenever, but it is your forum. Thanks so much for listening. Bye-bye.